Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I have worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly or to not put our hearts into an activity means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different aspect of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart and mind into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and the stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best and be well, Ron. Episode 5, Forgiving with Heart and Mind. A girl came to my office with a large scrape on the side of her leg. She'd fallen from her bicycle and onto the shoulder of the road. Her wound was filled with dirt and small stones. To heal, it had to be thoroughly cleaned. After numbing the area with lidocaine, I vigorously irrigated it with water and used tweezers to remove the remaining tiny stones. One small area could have benefited from a stitch or two, but it was too dirty to be closed in. I had to let it heal naturally, knowing the scar could be revised later if needed by a plastic surgeon. Once the physical wound was cleaned, the nutrients in the blood and local tissue worked to heal. This outer wound parallels our inner wounds. We need the help of our objective minds to think through what happened so we can wash away the destructive thoughts that prevent healing. The heart's love, warmth, and self-compassion then allows inner healing to occur. Where a plastic surgeon might be needed to work through some of the deeper, more complicated areas, trained mental health professionals can help us do the same. With healing, we can grow fully and strong. We can be ourselves, present and in the moment. A 15-year-old boy came to my office because his mom was concerned about him. "He's so angry," she said. "You have to help him." I knew this boy. He seemed like a nice kid. And I said, "What's up?" He said, "You know, when people get into my face, they just bother me." I knew he liked basketball, and I knew that this wasn't a great state of mind for him. His mother was really quite concerned. So I thought for a minute, and then I said, "Suppose you were the coach of a basketball team, and you had a kid on the team who was a great talent, but the hecklers in the stands and the trash talk from his opponents got to him and took away from his game. What would you say?" "I'd say, focus, Mom. You got to focus." I said, "Yes, that's exactly it. You can't let all these outer disturbances bother you. You need to focus on who you are." I then spoke with him a little bit further, and then I remembered something else about him. I said, "My sense is you have an underlying anger, and that underlying anger is because your father left the family and hasn't been in touch with you." He shook his head in agreement. "Your father's leaving," I said, "has nothing to do with who you are. It's because of his own drug and alcohol issues. He probably had those issues before you were even born." And I turned to his mom, who shook her head, "Yes." I said, "You can live your life and be on edge because you're mad at your father. But that doesn't give you a chance to be who you are. You can grow independently from that, knowing that you had nothing to do with his shortcomings and that you don't need to carry his shortcomings and failures into your own life. You can be your own person and you can be you, and that would be a benefit to you and those around you, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that look up to you. You seem like a very engaging guy, and I imagine that you're a leader. I could say this with authority because I had seen another boy of the same age who had a similar background. This was in another practice several years earlier, and this kid really struck me with how solid and strong he seemed. At one point during our conversation, he casually mentioned that he lived with his aunt and uncle. I asked why, and he said that his mother had died of a drug overdose and his father was in jail for dealing. I paused and said, "That sounds remarkably difficult. How did you get through it?" He said, "I looked at what happened to them." And I said, "That's not happening to me." The difference between the two is that while they both had challenges, the first boy took his father's leaving as a personal insult. He saw it as disrespecting him, as thinking that he wasn't worthy of his father's closeness, that he wasn't worthy of being loved. It wasn't worthwhile for his father to go out of his way to reconnect with him. He felt inwardly attacked. The second boy didn't have that. He didn't see it as an attack on himself. It was sad, but that's different. I saw the problem with the past mixing into the present in a negative way in another girl's wound. She came in because she had an area of swelling, redness, and pus. When I looked at it, I saw it was at the tip of an old laceration repair. The area was opened and cleaned out, and in it was found a small piece of suture material. After that was taken out and the area was cleaned again, it healed perfectly. This piece of an old scar lived in the present and wouldn't let the wound heal. My mother taught me about this. She and my dad had retired to Florida, but they still liked to come to New York during the summer to see family and friends. They were very frugal, to put it mildly, and one summer they stayed with an aunt and uncle. Now this aunt and my mother were friends before my mother met my father. Actually, she met my father through this friend. He was her brother. That summer they had a huge fight. It had to do with how my parents lived in their house. They treated it as if they were in a boarding home. They put their things in the refrigerator in one section, though they would take milk and cheese and other things that were around for my aunt and uncle. At the same time, they never did niceties. They didn't go out of the way to treat them. They didn't buy things for the house. They didn't buy things for everybody to share. They were very, very cheap. This led to an argument one day, and things were said that shouldn't have been said, and there were terribly bad feelings. My mother was so upset that she wouldn't speak with my aunt after this. She was so entrenched in her position that if my sister and I went to visit that aunt and uncle, or if I went to visit their son, my cousin, my mother would almost see us as their enemy. She was right and they were wrong, and that was it. My mother felt that she couldn't forgive her because that would be letting her off the hook. But this is a complete misunderstanding. The more angry she was at my aunt and uncle, the more they looked at her, convinced there was something wrong with her. Anger can be helpful. It can warn us of an issue that needs to be addressed, but if it stays too long, it can cause festering in the wound, and the wound won't heal. Everyday events can cause the same kind of pain. Imagine a loud person at work who you felt was just uncomfortable to be around. If it turned out that your former friends at work started to be attracted to her and spend their free time with her and kind of leave you out, then you would take offense. Then you would be upset at this person and at the others. This episode is called Forgiving with Heart and Mind, because in the situations that I described, it's the way the mind thinks about these problems that digs in a position that doesn't work. It sees itself as being slighted. Now, the heart knows that it can't be slighted. It doesn't need to prove itself, it is. We see this in the love parents have with their newborns. the love parents have for them has nothing to do with the newborn's traits, skills, and abilities. It's because that baby is. This is even highlighted when there's a newborn who's sick or a newborn who's born with significant medical problems. Their parents love them just the same, sometimes even more. The identity of ourselves can really, at a very basic level, not be threatened by others. It's how we hold it. We can heal by switching how we hold what happened. It also can help to heal through its compassion. We do that in our compassion and caring for others. We can also learn to use that towards self-compassion. To help me heal, I break these into five different kinds of forgivenesses. The first I call deathbed and jaws of life forgiveness. This is the approach to healing for the significant injuries and insults done to us as children. It's called jaws of life forgiveness in recognizing that we can't begin to heal until we remove ourselves from the wreckage, just like the jaws of life rip open a car to begin the healing process. In this kind of forgiveness, we start by seeing that what happened had nothing to do with us. The people that perpetrated those insults had problems, otherwise they would not have done something as cruel as what they did to a child. They did something wrong, and their wrongdoing was not because of who we were, it was because of their problems. We can move away from the problem because it really had nothing to do with us. Now, the heart can take this a little bit further by developing compassion for those that injured us. That compassion for them also helps us to move away. Through that compassion, we can see their hurts, we can see their pains, and a different way that I do it is by what I call deathbed forgiveness. We picture the person who injured us being on their deathbed, ill and alone. And we go to them and wipe their brow with a moist washcloth, or take a moist washcloth to the lips so they can suck on it, or hold their hand if they're shivering and fearful. And as we do this in this image, we drop any kind of reflection to anything that happened in the past. We're with them as they die, as one human being with another. This kind of imagery has nothing to do with conversing with the person who injured us. It's our being able to let go of the hurts of the past. Because we do this, it doesn't mean we don't protect ourselves. If they did something illegal, we can have police involvement. If we need to protect other children, we can do that. And if we feel that we can't see that person because they hurt us too badly, that's all right also. We can still forgive them and let it go. The second kind of forgiveness, the kind that was close to what my mom did, I call family gathering or business meeting forgiveness. In this kind of forgiveness, our impetus for forgiving is because of the impact of our anger on others. In my mother's case, it was unpleasant to be around her. It also made it so that it was unpleasant and felt uncomfortable for me to visit my aunt and uncle and my cousin. And it also meant that we couldn't have the family gatherings that we used to have. And other relatives were involved. My father's other brother and his wife were involved. So the reason for forgiving here goes beyond our own pains. It's to make it so that we don't cause problems for others. The most common manifestation for this is in divorce. When divorce couples battle, their children suffer. I saw a 10-year-old boy who was in the hospital because he took an overdose of Tylenol. When nobody else was around, they asked him why he did it, and he said that the last time he was sick, his parents got together. Anyone knows that to hear your parents arguing and that when your parents get divorced, you feel the pain. In family gathering forgiveness, we overcome our hurts, we overcome our differences in the name of our children. I also call it business meeting forgiveness, because if we could imagine that we had a business with somebody else and they did something wrong to us and we split up because of that, and then we went to our college reunion and we sat at the same table, we wouldn't want anybody else at the table to suffer from the difficulties that we had in our own relationship. We wouldn't even want them to know about it. We'd want to have an enjoyable time that evening. In this kind of forgiveness, the only way that we can get to the level of forgiveness that we need, that we could actually not only picture being with that person, but actually be with that person in the name of our children, is by eating humble pie. We have to be able to see how the other person sees us as wrong, admit that we did exactly that, apologize to them, and change how we are. We have to get off our own need to be right, and the only right that we want is the rightness of being the best parents we can possibly be for this child. One other step we need to take, we need to lose a little bit of our closeness. We have to become more detached. When we interact with them, we have to interact with them more the way we would with a professional daycare provider than with our former spouse. If we keep to the old scent of our former spouse, it'll blow up again. All the issues that happen will happen. We need to cool it down. The third kind of forgiveness is the kind of forgiveness that happens with everyday events. And this one I call rain slicker forgiveness. When I was a child, I had a yellow rain slicker that was made out of rubber and water couldn't penetrate it. It would just drop off. No water would enter that coat. What we need to do with rain slicker forgiveness is not let the many events that happen in life that can bother us. We just don't take them in. So suppose we're driving in a parking lot and somebody cuts us off. Instead of getting angry and upset and jamming on the horn and upsetting everybody else in the car and thinking that because we jam on the horn and scream, the person in the other car will see us jumping up and down and yelling and will change their ways as a driver, that doesn't happen. We upset ourselves, we upset everybody else around. Rain slicker forgiveness is not even to feel that upset. I do that easily by saying to myself, I know that there are many, many, many bad drivers. That person is one. Boy, am I glad we didn't crash. And that's it. With the loud person in the office, we can feel badly for them. We can feel what a shame that they're so miserable. We can figure out ways to not be with them. It's not helpful to try to gang everybody up against that person. We have to figure out how to do things a little bit differently. We might be able to talk to HR to see if HR can do anything. We also might use this as an impetus for switching our jobs. If there's someone in our life who always criticizes us, who cuts us off, who tells us what to do, rain slicker forgiveness appreciates that that person isn't going to change if we say something. That's who they are. That's their style. That's their manner. For good or for bad, that's how they are. What we need to do is put on the protection so we just don't hear it. It just doesn't bother us. We don't notice it. We can let go of the need for them to be different. There are two other kinds of forgiveness. One is a very unusual one. I call it going to the source forgiveness. I know of one person who went through this, and I read of two people who did. This is going to the place where the worst of the injuries occurred. A Dr. Wayne Dyer, who describes going to the graveside of the dad he hadn't seen since he was 3 years old when his dad left his mom, that he had tremendous anger toward this person his whole life. He discovered that he died 10 years after his death, and when he went to the graveside, his purpose was to let him have it, to let him know how miserable he made him and how much he suffered because of his having left the family and his never having come back. He did that, and then at the very end, he said, "I will never think of you badly again. I give you all my love. I forgive you for everything you've ever done." He was surprised when that thought came over him, and when that thought came over him, everything about his life changed. He became inspired, spent the next 14 days writing a book that became a huge bestseller. Dr. Edith Egger, in her remarkable book, The Choice, describes how she went back to Auschwitz, where she underwent the most horrible possible circumstances. And while there, she was able to again let go of the pains that she suffered and be free. This didn't mean she didn't have bad memories. It didn't mean that she didn't have tremendous difficulties that she had to overcome. But she felt a remarkable sense of being free. A friend of mine was abused as a child by her parents, who worked her unreasonably. They made her run the household with the six younger children. Years after they died, she had to go back to the house, get it cleaned, and get it ready for sale. While she cleaned it and while she was in there, all of the memories of the past poured on her. She was able to forgive her parents for what happened. She was able to see the good that actually came from her past, the strength she developed, and she walked out of there a different woman. There's one place where forgiveness has to do with interacting with the other person, and that's where we get into an argument or have a problem with someone that are closely connected to someone that we love, whether it's a friend, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a family member. There, when we have an argument, we both sit down and hash it out, hear each other's point of view, and we both forgive each other. There's one other kind of forgiveness that we shouldn't do. There's a place where we shouldn't forgive. This happens when we're about to tie the knot with someone else. If we're about to undertake a business partnership, if we're about to move in with someone, if we're about to marry someone, and we have misgivings, there are places where we worry that this won't work. We should stop and not proceed, because the misgivings that we have will bear themselves out. If we think we can change the person over time, we won't. I have a habit of asking people who are getting divorced if they're surprised, if they think back to when they first got married, are they surprised that they're now getting divorced? Over and over and over, I hear people tell me that they're not surprised. In fact, the only place where people really are surprised is if their divorce is due to an unexpected affair by one of the two of them. I developed this podcast to not only present an idea about how heart and mind can work together to make us happier, but also to offer interested listeners exercises so that they can use to incorporate these ideas into their life. For this episode, I have a four-part exercise. The first part is to reflect on and understand the role of anger in your life. Where is it helpful? Where has it outlived its stay? The second part of the exercise is to go over the different kinds of forgiveness that I described and the tools that we use to clear ourselves from them. For deathbed forgiveness and jaws of life forgiveness, it wasn't our fault. We can have compassion for the other. We can let go of the hurts. For family gathering forgiveness, the chief point is we do this for others. And to do this, we really have to let go of our desire to be right and instead do what's going to work to make the situation better for everyone involved. For rain slicker forgiveness, it means not letting the difficult situations that have to do with others' attitudes from affecting us. Just because other people have issues, that shouldn't throw us off our game. It's not got to do with who we are. It's got to do with issues that people have. We can be present, we can be alive, we can deal with them. We just shouldn't take their difficulties personally. The third part of the exercise is to pick one of these that we think we need some work on and do some work on it. The fourth part of the exercise is to picture ourselves whole. This is the motivating part of the exercise. Picture ourselves engaged in an activity that we really enjoy, where we fully give ourselves up to the activity. It could be a sport, it could be a craft, it could be while we're with a loved one, it could be while we're in nature. See the value in that, see how we get to be fully ourselves, and then see how if in that moment we become enraged and filled with anger, that moment of fullness and presence disappears. I plan on posting these podcasts on the 1st and 15th of each month. That means if you listen to this from the outset, you have 2 weeks to work on these exercises. If you're streaming podcasts, take a bit of time before going on to the next one. Think about the content here. I also offer some tools for interested listeners to use to help with the exercises and the work in this episode. At the podcast webpage at ronschneibaummd.com, I detail these exercises in the show notes. The show notes are also available at the homepage of Spotify Podcasts and at Apple Podcasts. These exercises can then be downloaded and you can read them. At the end of the show notes, I also have several quotations about forgiveness that I find inspirational and I hope you enjoy. In addition, at the podcast homepage at ronschneibaummd.com, that's ronschneibaummd.com, I also have a picture of a child wearing a yellow rain slicker with the words emblazoned in it, "Forgiving with Heart and Mind." This picture comes in two sizes, a larger one and a smaller one. The larger one can be downloaded and used as wallpaper for your tablet or laptop. The smaller one can be downloaded and used as a screensaver for your phone. I find that having a visible reminder of something I'm working on is very helpful. In addition, at the podcast homepage, you can email me with questions. These can be questions about the content, or they can be questions about your work on the exercise. The same with comments. Make comments and suggestions that I will use for future podcasts. Also, if you might be interested in a webinar that would look at some of these topics more privately and more intensely, let me know as well. I have one favor for you. If you find this material is interesting or valuable, I'd like you to share it. Share it with friends, share it with family members, share it with colleagues, share it with anyone you think might be interested. In addition, go to the homepage where you listen to podcasts or the Apple Podcast or Spotify Podcast homepage, rate it and review it. That's how podcasts get known. I appreciate and enjoy the time we spend together. This podcast gets laid down on the first of the year. All my best and happy new year. I look forward to speaking with you again. Be well, Ron.